Our first reading for today is a parable taken from On the Mystery by Catherine Keller. A man died. The people who knew him gathered to share memories. And finally, a portrait was commissioned. But as generations passed, the painting did not seem fine enough. The heirs of the portrait, who had become wealthy, created a new golden frame, immense, carved with motifs from the portrait and encrusted with jewels. People began to feel that the old portrait of that dark fellow with the haunting eyes pulled the effect down. As it began to peel from age, they extended the frame inward until one day the frame covered the whole canvas. And our second reading is a poem by the wonderful Mary Oliver entitled Maybe. Sweet Jesus, talking his melancholy madness, stood up in the boat, and the sea lay down silk and sorry. So everybody was saved that night. But you know how it is when something different crosses the threshold? The uncles mutter together. The women walk away. The young brother begins to sharpen his knife. Nobody knows what the soul is. It comes and goes like the wind over the water. Sometimes for days you don't think of it. Maybe after the sermon, after the multitude was fed, one or two of them felt the soul slip forth like a tremor of pure sunlight before exhaustion that wants to swallow everything, gripped their bones and left them miserable and sleepy as they are now, forgetting how the wind tore at the sails before he rose and talked to it, tender and luminous and demanding as he always was, 1,000 times more frightening than that killer storm.
The process theologian Catherine Keller opens a chapter in one of her books on Jesus with a very arresting image. She writes, "The only way that I can follow the way of Christ, the way that is Christ, is through the back door. For the front entrance is still patrolled by border guards. Do you believe that Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior?" they ask. And here's her punchline. In truth, Jesus would not have passed. As I think about this image, the picture that comes in my mind is from The Wizard of Oz. The archetypal image of guards outside an entryway, outside the Wicked Witch's castle. And I see Dorothy's friends crouched behind that rock, trying to figure out what to do because they need to get in the castle to rescue Dorothy and Toto, and they need to get in the castle to capture the witch's broomstick so that the wizard will help Dorothy get home. So Scarecrow, Tin Man, Lion, they look down from behind that rock and they know they cannot get in through the front gate past all those guards. They can't just walk right in. They're going to have to figure out a different way. This, Keller suggests, is the predicament facing those who want to follow the way of Jesus. Too often, guards block the way of Jesus, the way that is Christ. The guards are the legions of self-proclaimed guardians of the faith. They are the inquisitors, the folks who lift up the one true interpretation of Jesus Christ. And the only way past them often is to profess personal faith that we have been saved by Jesus. Admission is dependent on this profession of faith, not necessarily on how we actually live our lives. In truth, If Jesus himself walked up to that gate, he would not be admitted. So how do you get in? If you want to follow the way of Jesus, how do you do it? A good place to start in this quest is with a question. What is the way of Jesus? What is the way that is Christ, as Keller puts it? Well, with her, Catherine Keller, I believe that the way of Jesus has very little to do with professions of faith. Rather, I think it has to do with the way Jesus lived his life and the way he urged his followers to live their lives. And there is no clearer picture of this way of Jesus to me than a passage in the Gospel according to Matthew when Jesus is asked about who is righteous. And he talks about those who fed him when he was hungry, who gave him something to drink when he was thirsty. He talks about those who welcomed him when he was a stranger, who clothed him when he was naked, who took care of him when he was sick, who visited him when he was in prison. The righteous respond to this with confusion because they realize they haven't done any of these things, or maybe just one of them, to Jesus. And Jesus responds, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." Who's part of Jesus' family? Everybody. And the people that count the most are those who are most in need of food, of drink, of welcome, of clothing, of healing, of comfort. So following the way of Jesus involves caring about the most vulnerable among us, the poor, the sick, the oppressed. These most vulnerable are the least of these. What's more, following the way of Jesus is not just caring about folks who are most vulnerable, but working to change our society so less people are hungry, so less people need welcome. So the way of Jesus, it's not about professing faith or figuring out who's a heretic or working against gay marriage or worrying about the afterlife. Focus on the way of Jesus is not about your relationship with Jesus or God even. It's about your relationship with other people, especially the most vulnerable. And it turns out that Jesus is inseparable from the most vulnerable, and so are we. This is the heart of the gospel of Jesus. And it's a radical gospel. Jesus was a radical. He did not get crucified for preaching a cream puff gospel. You don't preach a gospel of love and justice and peace and revolutionary social change in Roman-controlled Palestine and not be a radical. You don't hang out with prostitutes and lepers and tax collectors and despised Samaritans and not be a radical. And you don't say caring for the vulnerable is what it means to be righteous and not be a radical. This is radical stuff, and it is these radical ideas that I think would force the guards to turn Jesus away. This view of this radical way of Jesus fits well with process theology, which was the focus of my sermon series in January. To remind you, or if you were not here, the central assertion of process theology is that life is inherently, relentlessly, pervasively relational and fluid. Life's all about relationships, and it changes. And this dovetails perfectly with this idea of this radical idea of caring for the most vulnerable. Following the way of Jesus is all about relationship, especially with those who are vulnerable, and following his way assumes that there is a fluidity in life, that the way things are can be changed, that the hungry can be fed, that the strangers can be welcomed. We humans have a capacity to do these things. And the question that process theology relentlessly poses to people is, what are you going to do in your next step to help build a better world? In process theology, God is thought of as that call forward that's calling us forward in that next step to help build a better world. So what happened to this radical view of Jesus? Why does it seem to be in eclipse today? Catherine Keller's parable, the first reading that Dottie shared today, gives us a picture, a metaphor for what happened. After Jesus died, the people who knew and loved him gathered to share memories. Finally, a portrait was commissioned. And because Jesus was so special, people began to feel like this portrait needed to have the finest frame imaginable. And over time, they added more jewels to this beautiful frame. In this metaphor, the frame, the jewels, are the trappings of church. Eventually, the frame became so fancy that it, not the picture of Jesus, became the focal point. In the metaphor, the trappings of church became more important than the message of Jesus, until one day, the frame covered the whole portrait, the fancy trappings obscuring the radical message of feeding the hungry and welcoming the stranger. The latest incarnation of all frame, no portrait Christianity is what Keller calls Christianity light. Here's how she describes Christianity light. Accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior, and then you can do whatever the hell you want. Well, within limits, you can practice war, hatred, greed, sexual hypocrisy, and destruction of the earth. That's all okay. But, she goes on, this Christianity light deploys its Christ for an anti-gay, anti-abortion agenda that claims to be the literal biblical truth and has literally zero basis in the Gospels. It weighs so little because it is conveniently devoid of Jesus. Christianity light, then Keller suggests, has dispensed with Jesus' radical message of caring about the most vulnerable and instead centers on professions of faith and this anti-gay, anti-abortion agenda. So what do we do when we approach Christianity and find that it's been hijacked and that it's guarded by day and night? What do we do? And let me be clear, by we, I mean we in this room this morning. As I see it in this fellowship, there are three primary responses to this situation. Some of us give up on Christianity. Maybe we never had anything to do with it anyway, or maybe we did, but we're ready to walk away. So we don't crouch behind that rock trying to figure out how to get in there. We just walk away. Others of us figure out, well, what the heck? Let's attack the guards. So we grab for stones, usually words, and start hurling them at the guards. Still others among us decide we want to figure out a way to get in there, a way back to a Christianity that focuses on this message of liberation for the most vulnerable. And today I have a message for each of these three responses. For those of you who walk away, I can understand this response. I respect it. It's a perfectly fine option. Christianity, for whatever reason, just is not your cup of tea. It doesn't speak to you. And I want to say you're welcome here. But there's one thing else that I want to say to you, if this describes you. It's a plea for you to understand that the Christianity of the guards is not the only Christianity there is. Sometimes the guards present it like it's the only Christianity, but that's a lie. It's not true. Focusing on the liberation of the most vulnerable is a strand of Christianity that, in my view, goes way back to the beginning and has been present in one form or another for 2,000 years. I can think of some of the great exemplars of this strand, some of the women mystics, St. Francis, the abolitionists, The social gospel advocates of the early 20th century who worked to end child labor practices. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Bishop Desmond Tutu, Thomas Merton, all exemplars of this strand. And this strand of Christianity remains alive and vital today. There are millions of Christians in the United States today dedicated to Jesus' gospel of liberation for the most vulnerable. Among them are Catholics and Congregationalists and Evangelicals and Methodists and Lutherans. Many of them live here in the Fox Valley. Some of them are in this room today. And so if you believe that Christianity has always been about narrowness and rigidity, in my view, you align yourself then with these Christian light folks. You aid and abet their efforts to rewrite Christian history, to rewrite it so that Martin Luther King and Bishop Tutu, and I would say even Jesus, are written out of Christianity. And you cut off the possibility of working with Christians to help build a better, more just world. So, if this is you, if you've chosen to walk away, but you have this idea that Christianity is this narrow Christianity light, I have a plea to make for you that is simple, to make to you that is simple and direct. Stop it. Stop it. Stop treating Christianity like it's this one strand that's so narrow and rigid and problematic. Walk away from Christianity, that's fine. But understand that Christianity is more than the Christianity of the guards. If you're in the group who have opted from time to time to pick up verbal stones and hurl them at the guards, I would say that you also are aiding and abetting Christianity Light's effort to rewrite Christianity. You are pretending like that one slice is the whole of Christianity, and you're ignoring the Christianity of Dr. King and Bishop Tutu and Jesus. And if you're throwing stones, you are violating our Unitarian Universalist principles. Verbal assaults on all of Christianity sabotage the spirit of openness and welcome that is so critical to this fellowship's existence. We do have Unitarian Universalist Christians here. And when we lob verbal assaults at Christianity as a whole, of course the Christian you use among us feel unwelcome. Such assaults say that every path is welcome here except Christianity. And this flies in the face of two of our seven UU principles: acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, and our affirmation of a free and responsible search for meaning and truth. There's a word for throwing stones at Christianity in a UU congregation. It's not a pretty word. The word is hypocrisy. If you are inclined to throw stones at Christianity, I beg you, put the stones down. Walk away from this castle entry, that's fine, but put the stones down. And make something positive of your faith. Don't make it just a negation of Christianity. And finally, for those who are trying to find a back door into Christianity, to Jesus, I think this is a fine pursuit. It's a welcome pursuit here. You are welcome here. I am, in fact, one of you. I consider myself a follower of Jesus, among other things. I am inspired and I am chastened by his radical message to care about the most vulnerable. And I try to live in accordance, imperfectly as I do, with this radical gospel. So what is this back door to Jesus? Where can we find it? It's actually amazingly easy to find. You don't have to wander through a maze to find it. When you get there, there's no secret handshake or password. There's not even any guards, it turns out. What's the back door? The back door is feeding the hungry and welcoming the stranger. It's clothing the naked and caring for the sick and visiting the imprisoned. The back door is working to end poverty and oppression and bigotry. And the back door is believing that it is possible to end these things. This back door is easy to find, but it's really hard to walk through. This is what I love about Mary Oliver's poem. She paints a picture of this sweet Jesus, tender and luminous and demanding. 1,000 times more frightening than the killer storm he quiets. The hijacked Jesus of Christianity Light, or the Inquisition, for me is way less frightening than this Jesus who gently demands that I live my life as if I think the most vulnerable are truly my brothers and my sisters. Trying to live that way, that's 1,000 times more difficult and frightening. Walking the way of Jesus is not easy street. It requires constant searching moral inventories, and it requires me to be willing to share and even to give up some of my privilege. It means getting to know and standing with the undocumented immigrant, the underpaid, undervalued worker who's trying to organize a union in the workplace, the family struggling to make ends meet in Appleton or Nina or Nairobi. So it's a difficult path. I also find this way, though, to be beautiful. The final destination of this path is not heaven somewhere else. It's heaven on earth. Heaven on earth is where we all share in the abundant gifts of life together so that no one is hungry, so that no one is unwelcome. Heaven on earth is the way I picture it is this great banquet with all of us in our resplendent diversity, sitting side by side, sharing in the meal, sharing in the conversation, sharing in laughter together. Imagine such a table stretching through vast meadows, lush and green. No one guards this banquet table. No one checks your invitation to see if you really should be there. There's a seat for everyone who wants to be there. Everyone is welcome. For Jesus, this is paradise. And it's a paradise that is possible to create in the here and now of this world. And there's only one place for each of us to begin creating paradise here. In our very next word. And in our very next action.